Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
This podcast is brought to you by Native Grape Odyssey. Native Grape Odyssey is an educational project financed by the European Union to promote European wine in Canada, Japan, and Russia. Enjoy. It's from Europe.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast with me, Monty Walden. My guest today is Daniele Cernili. Daniele is Italian and he's a journalist and wine writer with his own website called drwine.it. And that's a website that is published both in his native Italian and in the English language. And it's well worth checking out. A lot of detail in what Daniele does. And we're going to dig down in that. We're going to dig down into that over the next 10 or 15 minutes or so. Welcome, Daniele.
Thank you.
Briefly, where are you from and did you come from a winemaking or wine background?
Okay, I'm from Rome, that is in Italy, of course, and I began a lot of years ago because I was an expert in geography, and the wine is a geography of taste, and I discovered that when I was 20 years old, and I continue to drink wine and to taste wine because my passion is to understand where I am in a country or the wine is a taste of a country, of a place.
So obviously from Rome, you're in the region of Lazio.
Yes, so but Lazio is not a good word because Lazio is the second football team of Rome, and I am from Rome, not from Lazio. Okay. You know, Lazio is a good name for a region, less for a team, a soccer team.
All right, we're talking football here. So Lazio is a team, and
I'm joking, of course. But
so Lazio is a region, and it's also the name of a team, and there's also AC Roma. So there are two teams in Rome, basically Roma. Lazio and Roma.
Roma, yes, it's like Liverpool and Everton.
Yeah, exactly.
And Lazio is the Everton of Rome. You know,
it's a well-known English player called Paul Gascoigne, who played for Lazio for a couple of years.
Yes, of course, did
a few crazy things. Moving swiftly on to wine, let's see if we can dig down into what is fashionable at the moment in Italian wine. What are the trends? Are they being driven by climate change, by consumer preferences?
There is a few words about the universe, probably, because the Italian wines are so many and so different. And in each little part of Italy, there is a wine, a typical wine, not even a good wine, but a typical wine. So this is very, very important to understand, because for us, for in Italy, the wine is like the bread, like the olive oil. It's something to drink and something to eat. It's normal. It's a familiar consumption.
It's food, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like food. For example, when the British people or the American people, it's a wine for food. For us, it's normal, the wine for food. It's not a bad word. This is important to understand, because the Italian wines mainly are wine for food, and this is a good thing for us. No? It's not a bad thing, something like that. So the idea is to have in front of us 500 different DOC, for example, or IGT or denomination, more than 500 different vines,
native grape varieties.
So it's very impressive, interesting to get into the Italian wine world for that reasons. It's difficult to say what will be the future of all. Some will be very, very good. Some future will be very good for some varietals like Nebbiolo or Sangiovese or something like that. In other parts, not known varietals, so probably will be a local consumption or a local wine. So I don't know what will be in the world the consumption of, Coda di Volpe or Pecorino or something like that.
So in terms of these native grape varieties, What would you suggest is the best way for someone wanting to learn about native grape varieties who maybe doesn't have a huge amount of experience of Italian wine? Are they just going to say, you know what, with 500 different or more native varieties and all these denominations, why don't I just give up? Why don't I just give up and become a train spotter, for example? Why would I bother getting into this?
But I like very much Aglianico, for example, in the south, and the Taurasi, that is the DOCG made of Aglianico, that is fantastic in some cases.
In Campania.
In Campania, of course. Not far from Naples, but very continental weather, because in 50 kilometers change everything. And they have not a Mediterranean weather. They have a very continental weather, so it's cold normally, and it snows in the area of Irpinia. But because of the mountain, because there is a lot of mountains not far from Naples, it is strange to understand, because we are... From Mediterranean weather to continental and cold weather, there is 550 kilometers, not more, and it's difficult to understand.
550 meters.
Yes.
Yeah, so you get snow, and also in, we're talking about Aglianico, also in the Vulture in in Basilicata.
It's the same, because the Vulture and the Pini are not so far, and there are another 50 kilometers. So
what you're saying, you're in the really hot south, but... Because of the altitude.
Yes, the altitude and the snow and the continental weather. So hot in the day and very cold in the night, for example, or very cold in some part of the seasons of the year. But there are many situations in this way, because Italy is a peninsula, is long and thin, and there are many sub-regions and many different of weather in a few kilometers. So
it's worth reminding ourselves that around 70%, I think, of Italian vineyards are on hill slopes of some sort. So automatically you've got air movement, and therefore you've got microclimatic or mesoclimatic differences. And they are, as Daniele says, going to really have an influence on the expression of the vine and its grapes.
Yes, if you imagine the situation in France and in Spain, there are bigger countries than Italy, you know, and so the difference is in weather, it's really less in comparison with the Italian differences. And so this is not good or bad,
it's just different.
So other varietals very interesting, Timorasso in a south eastern part of Piedmont, for example, or some local varietals like in Sardinia, the Bovaleddu, or some Nuragus, that is a white varietal unknown out of the region. And this is very, very important to understand. It's complex to understand, of course. Mrs. Jensis Robinson said that you have too many varietals, too many denominations to be comprehensible by a lot of people. She is true, but this is our tradition.
That's one way of putting it. I'm not necessarily sure. I think in terms of denominations, possibly there's a lot of repetition with the DOC or DOCGs or IGGs, possibly the DOCs more than the DOCGs, to be honest. But I mean, I don't think you could ever wish away any of the grape varieties. I can't think of any native variety that I've tried in Italy that I don't particularly like.
But I don't know what guy can wish for native varieties, because probably a lot of them remains in local consumption.
Sure.
So of course. I think it's a sort of culture of wine, material culture of wine that is interesting. That's really interesting historically, probably, and as a sociology matter, no? And not for the only the quality of the wine or something like that.
Okay, so maybe what we could do is just go for a couple of regions, big or small. If we just pick a couple at random, and we can ask you your favourites.
Campania, probably, and...
But you're Roman, so you're not from Campania. So
no,
you're
not, I'm not being, from Campania.
You're being very independent here.
Yes. It's completely different from... But Campania is fantastic.
And
Campania was the Fiano, and Greco, and Aglianico, and Falanghina. But a lot of other... For example, in the Campi Flegrei, that is on the north of Naples, there are a volcanic area, like Yellowstone, you know? And there is a great volcano.
Fields of fire, Campi. Yeah, with the fields of fire.
Yes, with cinder soil, and the phylloxera didn't reach the vineyards, and so there are ungrafted vineyards of Falanghina or Piedi Rosso that are incredible. There is some many Falanghinas that seems a Riesling, a Mediterranean Riesling. Very fascinating.
Yeah, Campania is interesting, especially in Naples. Yeah. If you go there, last time I was there, I actually went to Campi Flegrei, and that comes up. Yeah. You think of the cuisine there, the pizza and the mozzarella. And a local told me, he said, "We like, this is our fast food." And I said, "Yeah, obviously it's classic fast, it's not like a burger and stuff." And they said, "You know why we make our mozzarella, which is milk one day and cheese almost the next day?" And I said, "No, why?" "Well, the reason we do it so quickly is we don't know if we're going to be here tomorrow." I said, "What do you mean?" Yes. He said, "Well, we literally live on a volcano."
Yeah, yeah. So the mozzarella tastes different, no? Because it's a little smoky, and it's very, very, very curious. And the second place, it is not so Italian because it's Sutticola, Alto Adige. And in Alto Adige, they have fantastic white wines and some good red wines. I don't know, the border with the German culture, because a lot of people in Alto Adige speaks German.
You're Austrian, yeah. It was part of Austria until 1919.
Tyrol is a region that goes from Italy to Germany, to the Bayern region. They are very close in mentality, or a lot of people in Bozen and in Brixen, they are supporter of Bayern Munich. Soccer teams,
the German football team, yeah, even though they're
German
living in Italy.
German soccer team, not Italian. And they are German culture, Austrian, and they make fantastic, for example, Gewürztraminer in Termino, Tramin, or fantastic Sauvignon in some part of the region. And there is probably an incredible varietal, local varietal, that is Lagrein. Lagrein is a red varietal, very, very interesting. It's very close to a Terol. They go to a local rustic Syrah, for example, or a rustic Mourvèdre, something similar to them.
Okay, let's pick a very famous and sometimes even controversial region, Tuscany. So the influence of Bordeaux there on the red wines, and also the some people argue the underperforming whites, say like Vernaccia di San Gimignano.
You know, in Bulgari it's normal to have Cabernet Sauvignon, and in some part Merlot or Syrah, because Bulgari is a new world for the wine. In fact, they began to make wine at the end of the 60s, so 50 years ago. And the Bulgari is like a Bordelaise island in Mediterranean area, like I don't know, in Spain, the Priorat, in some case. But there are only Bulgari that is so international styled. The other part of Tuscany is based on Sangiovese, of course, and the vinification of Sangiovese could change because of the different idea about the vinification or different philosophy by the winemakers. But there is Sangiovese, so Chianti Classico or Brunello di Montalcino or Vino Nobile, they are different interpretation of Sangiovese in different terroir.
So if I were to ask you in a very few words the difference between 100% Sangiovese Chianti Classico and 100% Sangiovese from Montalcino, just an average Montalcino wine in terms of style, not in terms of quality, what would you say the differences might be?
Imagine that Montalcino is in the southern part of Tuscany, so the body, the alcohol contains, the tannins are more evident. In Chianti Classico you can have some big wines in the southern part, in Castelnuovo Berdenga for example, but in Radda or in the higher part of Castellina and Greve you can have very elegant wines by Sangiovese. It's like the Pinot Noir side of the Sangiovese, in order to give an idea. Of course you have to change what we have to change. But the acidity is more than the tannins, for example.
Sure.
In the southern part, the tannins are more than the acidity, like in the main part of Brunello di Montalcino. So the big body is from Siena and Brunello. The elegance is more from Chianti Classico.
Sure. Let's go off to, say, the Marche. to Verdicchio. How do you rate Verdicchio as a white wine grape?
Verdicchio is a fantastic wine, white wine grape. But it's like there are many white singers that sings the blues, no? And because like Joe Cocker, for example, or Steve Winwood, and Verdicchio is something like that. Verdicchio is a big white varietals that can give us a little bit red wines, because the acidity is more salty, is saltier than lemony, and the body is a great body. It's like Chenin Blanc, for example, or like some cépage, some varietals from the south of France.
No, some of the Rhone varieties,
yeah, yeah. From Châteauneuf-du-Pape, Palette, the southern part of France. And Verdicchio is a wine with some similitudes with this kind of wine. So.
Okay, now, what about another bruiser is Sacrantino from Montefalco in Umbria. How do you get on with Sacrantino? It's probably Italy's most tannic grape, along with maybe Pinot.
Yeah, yes, I think it's the more tannic grape of the world.
Yeah.
Because the contains in the polyphenols and in tannins are incredible. So if you like tannins, Sacrantino is your wine.
Sure.
If you don't like tannins, don't have Sacrantino. This is the main thing. But Sacrantino is a little fascinating because for the wild boar, for example, to match.
Which they have a lot of.
It's a wine for food, of course, but it's a very good wine for food.
Or lamb.
For lamb, but more than lamb, the venison or
game,
because the tannins match the fat, the added fat, not the inside fat. So the added fat, and if you cook in selvaggina,
the game,
you add a lot of fat, because the butter, the olive oil, and so you for a lot of time, for a lot of long cooking. So you need tannins to match. And this is the real goal of the mission of the Sacrantino.
Okay, let's jump down to Sicily. There is, say, for example, Etna. What's going on in Etna?
Etna, we talk about Etna more than we drink, probably. And Etna is a fantastic place, but it's not Sicily, because in Etna there are more northern wine than you can expect. In Etna, they have vineyards over 600 meters on the sea level, so more northern, more in altitude that you can expect from a sub-Mediterranean area, and the results are more northern-styled wines than the other part of Sicily. If you go to the western part of Nero d'Avola, they are big wine, alcoholic. In Etna, they are elegant, they are thin and agile wines, and this is the difference. When you drink Etna, drink to a northern region, not a Mediterranean region overall. The Caricante for the whites and the Nerello Mascalese for the red wines are very, very interesting in this case, like Nebbiolo or sometimes Pinot Noir.
Speaking of Nebbiolo, let's go off to Piemonte. In a nutshell, the difference between Barbaresco and Barolo.
They are very similar. Mr. Ceretto, that is one of the best producers of Barolo, says, if I want to invite a nice lady for a dinner, I order a Barbaresco. If I know that I have to die tomorrow, I began to drink Barolo. Barolo is a big wine, is a little southern in comparison with Barbaresco, so tannins, alcohol contains is more than the media of the Barbaresco. Barbaresco is more elegant. It's like the same difference between Brunello and Chianti Classico, or Pauillac and Margaux. The elegance of Margaux and the powerful wines from Pauillac. Like Pauillac is Barolo and Margaux could be the Barbaresco, in order to give an idea. Of course, it's different, but to give an idea could be useful.
Now let's jump off to Emilia. Sparkling wines, Lambrusco.
Lambrusco is a universe because there are black Lambrusco and pink Lambrusco. There are the black Lambrusco from Reggiano and from Parma, very black, from Graspa Rossa di Castelvetro, and Lambrusco Maestri and Lambrusco Marani. There are varietals very, very dark Lambrusco. Lambrusco Risorbara is very similar to a pink wine, to a rosé wine, so more more acidity, more drinkability, and the wine less body. So in among the Lambrusco there are many differences, and the Romagna is completely another region.
It's nearer the Adriatic coast, moving towards Rimini. That side, that's the eastern side of Emilia Romagna.
The east part of Emilia Romagna is the Romagna. It is another region. It's like Beaujolais and Côte d'Or, different varietals, because in Romagna they don't make any sparkling wine, but they make Sangiovese, like in Tuscany, or Albana in Trebbiano, that are the local, the native white varieties. So it's different. It's a normal wine, not sparkling. There is some sparkling wine, but it's not so common.
What's the difference between the Sangiovese from Romagna to just say any sort of classic Tuscan Sangiovese from a moderately County classic?
Yes, I made an interview to Madame La Loubise de Roy several years ago, and it's an example, of course. Madame La Loubise de Roy was the owner of Domaine de la Romanée-Conti and Le Roy Domaine, and I asked her, "You are the best producer of Pinot Noir." And it's a misunderstanding. I don't make any Pinot Noir. I make Latache, Richebourg, and Romanée-Conti. I use the Pinot Noir, but they are not Pinot Noir. So
the wines of Terroir before
Sangiovese, yes, of course. So Romagna Sangiovese is a Sangiovese, and the varietals is more important than the Terroir for the moment. In Tuscany, there is not Sangiovese alone. There is Chianti Classico, Brunello, and Vino Nobile, and Morellino di Scanzano. So differences by the Terroir. In Romagna, the wine is very big. Normally, the acidity could be good in some part, in the higher part, but normally the wine is horizontal and big. In Tuscany, there is more differences between one terroir and the other.
Yeah, more nuances.
Yes, but there are also some fantastic Romagna Sangiovese in Modigliana, in Brisighella, for example, but they begin only now to distinguish the different terroir.
Abruzzo, so you have the two famous ones, Trebbiano di Abruzzo, which is the white wine.
Trebbiano di Abruzzo is not a Trebbiano. Trebbiano di Abruzzo is a Trebbiano di Abruzzo that is a local clone.
Trebbiano
Abruzzese. Yeah, Trebbiano Abruzzese is a green Trebbiano. It's more similar to a Verdicchio than a Trebbiano from Tuscany, for example. But the main varietals of Abruzzo is the Montepulciano, and there is a misunderstanding, because Montepulciano is the name of a town in which they make Vino Nobile di Montepulciano in Tuscany, and that is a Sangiovese wine. And there is a Montepulciano d'Abruzzo, that is a big red wine, very dark, very powerful wine, with some incredible interpreter, like, I don't want to make any name, but there are really important interpreter of Montepulciano d'Abruzzo, big wines and powerful wines. Different, dark in the color, or very aging, and very important. Like, I don't know, they remember me some Alicante wines from Spain.
Remind you of Alicante,
or
yeah.
Some Malbec from Argentina, yeah. No? Some
very wine deep and dark,
that,
yeah.
Like that, no?
Yeah. What about Puglia? Negro Amaro,
you know, many years ago we call Puglie, because the Puglie, that is plural, are three. One is the north, that is very close to Abruzzi, and they grow Montepulciano and Nero di Troia. In the central part there is Castel del Monte, that is Nero di Troia too, and Bombino Bianco as a white, and di Salento, that is the hill
of Italy.
Yeah, of Italy. It is a flatland, red soil, with Negro Amaro mainly, and in the western part it is a Primitivo. And Negro Amaro is an interesting varietal, the big wine, but Primitivo is the Zinfandel. Is the Primitivo di Gioia del Colle is completely the same thing of Zinfandel. So they are wine that you can imagine. No? So, and Primitivo means the early keeping wine, the early harvesting wine. The contrary of tardivo, is a late harvest wine. So the Primitivo is the first white grapes you can take during the harvest. So the Primitivo is a big wine that is very close to Amarone, for example, in some cases. It's different, of course, because there are 1,000 kilometers between Papuglia and Amarone in Verona. But it is very interesting, the comparison, because they are the brothers, far brothers, you know, for the character of the wine and not for the character of the varietals, of course.
Okay, that was the hill. Let's go to the toe of Italy, which is Calabria. What are the native varieties there in a nutshell?
Calabria is Gallioppo, Magliocco and Greco. Gallioppo is the varietal of Ciro, that is the same varietal of the wine of Vittoria, that is Frappato, and Gallioppo is the same thing. And they are close relatives to Sangiovese, for example, probably Mr. Professor Scienza said that Gallioppo, Magliocco, and Nerello Mascalese and Sangiovese, they are cousins.
No? Yeah, so, they're part of the same family.
Same family. Okay. So, and in Calabria they produce not so many wines and not so big quantity of wines, but sometimes they are surprising because they are old wines that they come from the past.
Sure.
There is a great tradition. Probably the winemaking is not perfect for the moment, but they are improving.
Yeah, they'll get it right, I'm sure. Yeah. Okay, what about Liguria, which is on the western coast?
Yes, western and eastern coast.
It's another
there, because there are different traditions. For example, there are the Pigato in the western part and Rossese, that is very close to, and Ormeasco, that is very close to Dolcetto, Piedmontese Dolcetto. The Vermentino is the only variety that is on the west and on the east coast of Liguria. And Vermentino is the Rolla, is very close to the Codega from Portugal. And there is Vermentino in Sardinia, there is Vermentino also in the Tuscan coast. So it's a Mediterranean and very interesting white varietal, in my opinion. Very, very drinkable, not so complex, but very interesting.
Okay, more whites from, talk about Friuli Venezia Giulia.
Yes, Friuli is very similar to Alto Adige for some reasons, but they are closer to the sea, so it's a more southern part of for the weather. And they have some international varietals like Sauvignon and Chardonnay, but they are Pinot Bianco, that is from Alsace, of course, from Burgundy, but now in Friuli they make a good quantity of Pinot Bianco and a good quantity of two not native but traditional varietals like Friulano, that is a Sauvignon Vert, completely disappeared in Loire or Sauvignonas, that is completely disappeared in Bordeaux and in Loire, but very important in Friuli. And Ribolla, that is the same in Slovenia, for example, and probably in Greece too, but it's a little different clone and different varietal for many reasons.
And also tonnage used for these skin contact white wines, yeah?
But it's very interesting because the orange wine, the so-called orange wine, are very good if you have white varieties with a lot of polyphenols that are the same of red wines. Yeah. The white people, the white singer that sing the blues, no? Yeah. Is the same idea. And so it's possible to have a great, interesting orange wine, for example, Mr. Gravner or a lot of producer in Carso, that is a part in the middle between Slovenia, Croatia and Italy. There are many wine made in this way. Very interesting. Little producer, artisanal producer that let ferment the white must with the skins. And so it's very interesting.
Right, another famous white wine from Italy, which is with bubbles this time, is Franciacorta from Lombardy.
Yes, Franciacorta, not only Franciacorta. There is, in Italy, the sparkling wine area is the contrary of France. We have the Pinot Noir in the southern part, in Oltre Po Pavese, in Lombardy. We have the equivalent of the Vallée du Marne in the middle part, Franciacorta. And we have the Côte de Blanc, mainly Chardonnay grown in Trento Doc, cioè in Trentino, so in the upper part, that is the contrary of Champagne. And the character are very similar, the bigger wine and in Oltre Po Pavese, the more elegant probably in Franciacorta, the crispier wine in Trento DOC, mm-hmm. that are very close to some champagne of the Côte d'Ivoire.
Staying on sparkling wine, but this time a not bottle fermented one, Prosecco, Prosecco Val d'Obbiadene and Cartizze.
Yes, Prosecco is the big success, and now it's possible to produce Prosecco in several parts of the northeast of Italy, as you know. But the traditional area is Val d'Obbiadene and Asolo, and in Val d'Obbiadene there is a little part of Val d'Obbiadene called Cartizze, that is a vineyard, a little area, a cru, we can call in Champenois point of view. It's like a cru. The Glera, that is the varietal, is a very neutral varietal. It's possible to make very, very pleasant wines, probably very difficult to make very important wines from Glera and in the Prosecco area. But the Prosecco likes to a lot of people, so
very popular.
Very popular, so it's a national popular wine. So it's like a big Blanquette de Limoux in France or White Zinfandel in California. It's the same idea, with the idea probably a little more cleverness in winemaking, because some Prosecco are very, very nice. Not big wines, but very drinkable, very, very nice, easy to drink, and I think it could be interesting for a lot of people.
Okay, let's go to Veneto, which has another spectacularly successful wine, Amarone.
Yes, the Amarone is a modern wine, you know, because they invented Amarone in the 50s of the last century, so it's a wine that exists from, 70 years, not more. And Amarone, it's the cross between a big wine and a drinkable wine, because the roundness of the Amarone is very evident because of the alcohol. It's like a light harvest wine, dry,
and with
not sweet.
Yeah, and with some tannins. Yeah.
And all the little sugar that remains and the alcohol match and balance the tannins, and this is very important. And a lot of people likes that in China, in the Far East, in America, in Germany, they like this kind of wines, and probably some Zinfandel or some Barossa, Syrah. They are in the same point of view. So big wine with a little bit of sugar residuals and that balance the tannins, because no many people likes the tannins, and the Amarone is an answer to this
house,
kind of taste.
Yeah.
It's the contrary of the Bordelais style, the new Bordelais or the super Tuscan style.
Okay, so finally we can finish with one of my absolutely favourite wine styles from Italy, is Recciotto.
Ricciotto white or red?
You're going to tell us.
Okay, the Ricciotto white is from white varietals, Garganega, Ricciotto di Soave, of course. And the red is from Corvina and Corvinone and Morina. It's like a big red wine. It's something similar to a Porto vintage without alcohol added.
Without added alcohol, yeah, and spirit. Yes,
yeah. Yeah, so wine for lovers of this kind of wines, not very popular and very expensive, of course. But probably if you have, some foie gras or some cheese, blue cheese, the ricciotto or sweet ricciotto could have the same rule that the Porto have with the Stilton.
And Vinsanto?
Vinsanto is the real natural wine in Italy, because the Vinsanto, when you make Vinsanto in Tuscany, the Vinsanto, you didn't add anything. You leave to the nature to make the fermentation and to forget the wine in the barrel and hope for the best.
Yeah.
And so it's very natural. Sometimes it's fantastic. Sometimes not. So it's a risk, but sometimes could be very, very interesting.
Yeah, I think they're sort of almost indestructible. They're very versatile. You can open a bottle, keep it open for a week or two, still going to be good.
Yes.
Great with cheese.
Because the alcohol, of course.
Yeah.
It's a big alcohol, because it's a dry wine. It's a dry grapes wine, so...
And finally, we're going to go back to where we started, Lazio. Lazio. They do. Yeah, we got it. Let's dig out a couple of Lazio wine or vini laziali, which are made from native grapes.
There are many Frascati. Yes, Frascati. There are many vini wines from Lazio. I love some wines from Lazio because are the wines of my youthness. No,
yeah,
because I'm from Rome, so the wine from Lazio I know very well. In Frascati they are improving now because of the Malvasia del Lazio, that is a local varietal, and they are beginning to vinify in right way. And there are some wines from, for example, red varieties like Cesanese, that is very interesting. It is in the southeastern part of the region, and there is the northern part that is on the border of Umbria and the Orvieto, for example, Montefiascone wines are not bad. Very crispy and very, very good to match the local cuisine.
Which can be quite rich, can't it?
Yeah, if you have a carbonara, please drink Frascati.
Okay. Well, let's end there. That's a tip from a Roman, by the way. That's a good one. Thanks very much, Daniele Ciornili.
Thank you, Monty.
Dr. Wine. Daniele told me before this interview, and I've known Daniele, I don't know for how many years, my English isn't so good, not mine, but his. And I was like, you know,
no, my English is terrible.
I have to apologize myself.
For
but
we're
not. It's not the quality. It's what you said actually. That's as well as the quality of your English. That is incredibly impressive. A lovely little
tour around
Italy.
You are too kind.
And for anybody that's just getting into Italian wine, listen to this podcast 2, 3, 4, 5 times. And make sure you follow up on these wines and get a little bit of information about the grape varieties and the winemaking practice and what people say about these wines. And if you do that, within a month or two, you will really start to feel confident in Italian wine. Daniele's given you a fantastic template there to follow, and you're going to have a fantastic journey. He won't be there by your side physically, but he'll be there on audio. Do make use of this podcast. I'm going to listen to it again and find out if I missed anything. I hope I didn't, and I wish you the best of luck, and I want to say thank you once again to Daniele Ciornili. Dr. Wine, it's been super duper. I'm really so happy you did that.
Thank you.
This podcast has been brought to you by Native Grape Odyssey, discovering the true essence of high-quality wine from Europe. Find out more on nativegrapeodyssey.eu. Enjoy. It's from Europe.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.